when you're doing a math problem in high school, it's like, you know, like doing algebra, it's like if you have this many apples and that many apples and this person's eating this many apples at this rate and whatever, right? Like, and then you're trying to make a formula like, okay, well, X is apples and Y is time.
This translation constantly.
Yeah, just call them apples and time, you know? Like, why do we have to do it this way?
And then when you draw your graph, put apples on one axis, put time on the other. Yeah, you don't need an X on one.
Why are we playing this game?
It's, anyway, this is a weird pet peeve to have, but man, it pisses me off. Scotch. Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 288 of Coffee with Butterscotch, the game dev comedy podcast, Butterscotch Shenanigans. I'm Seth, and I'm the games programmer.
I'm Adam, and I'm sitting in a white void.
I'm Sam, and I'm wearing a robe.
And this is a show where we talk about life, business, and working in the games industry. Today is December 4th, 2020. Before we get started, we have a warning. There's going to be swears on this show. We'd also like to thank our supporters over at moneygrab.bscotch.net who are helping keep our pod juices filled up.
Pod juice is made of just blended up cash, turns out. Yep. These machines are expensive to run.
Yeah, it's tough because you got to blend it enough that it becomes a liquid, which I don't know if you ever blended cash, but it takes a long time. Takes a lot of blending. You know, first it's a powder, and you're like, how does it become a liquid? Well, that's where the heat comes in. You got to blend it, you know, fast enough to create enough friction to liquefy
it. But not so fast that it catches on fire. It's a fine line.
It's a fine balance, and that's why it's so expensive. And we have a new supporter, Nick, who says, after listening to you guys about ADHD, I finally decided to seek help. After 3 months and a lot of money for doctor visits and evaluations, I have my answers and diagnosis. I'm now happily medicated and more productive.
Congratulations.
Here's your next copay on me. Thanks for the great content.
Awesome. Congrats. That's good to hear.
Yeah, I feel a little guilty then also adding more money to how much it costs to have ADHD because, oh my God, the cost of having – of going to a physician, this is in the United States, obviously, because of how healthcare works here. But of going to a physician who actually is an expert in adult ADHD, right, means almost guaranteed they're in private practice. And that almost also guarantees they're not going to take your fucking insurance. So those costs, boy, those add up real fast.
Yeah, it's also telling that we differentiate between adult ADHD and non-adult ADHD as if they're a different thing when it's the same thing.
They're the same thing. Well, the difference is that adults have spent their whole lives constructing mechanisms to operate given that they have ADHD. And so being able to diagnose it is different because now when they ask a question like, oh, do you do this? Then the answer is actually often no, but it's because I have like this stack of 10 systems that I use to make it so I don't have to do that. You know? So it's a trickier beast.
So kind of like, do you find your mind wandering when you're reading? It's like, no, because I've co-opted my significant other to tase me every time I lose attention.
Mm-hmm. Or that you only read things. You only, like in my case, like I only read fun, engaging, action-packed sci-fi because then I can stay engaged because it's very exciting and very fun. And I'm an adult, which means I can read whatever the fuck I want. And that's, you know, that's my system.
And then, of course, you end up accidentally staying up to 3 o'clock in the morning reading that book, you know, because you can't stop reading it because you don't have control over your brain.
And I'd say saying that as somebody who did that this very past night and I'm basically – just dead right now.
Yep. Right now. It's a real fun time for everybody. Yep. And we'd also like to, of course, thank our recurring supporters over at moneygrab.bscotch.net as well. All right, let's talk about stuff. We're going to try to keep it a little brief today in terms of talking about, you know, stuff just that general news. Because we've been really light on the questions these past months. I don't know. But we want to get
really
more questions.
All the time, if we're being honest, but sort of in particular recently.
So there's a couple things we just wanted to talk about. One is kind of funny, which is we came across this new tool. I think Adam found it.
Yeah, my wife was looking at it because so just for the context, my wife was upgrading her production systems and was asking us what we do. So then we were talking about Monday. So she's looking at a Monday. Then she was like, if I want to use Monday as a single individual, you know, then I have to buy 3 seats. You know, like, because there's no free tier in Monday. And there's also they just go right into a business tier where there's a 3-seat minimum. So it would cost her like $30 a month or something stupid just to have two extra seats for no reason to use it. So first of all, Monday, that is an idiotic, shitty business plan.
Come on, Monday.
But the result of this, which is also why this is a shitty business plan, was that Jenny was like, okay, Google searching alternatives to Monday. And came across ClickUp, which she dug into, and then was sort of sharing with me what that was. And it's basically in many ways, it is Monday.com. Like, it's the same structure and stuff. It's a much newer thing. So Monday.com has actually been around for more than 10 years. It used to be called, oh my God, what was it? It used to be called
Asana?
No. It was something so dumb. It was, what was it?
Da Pulse.
D-A-B-U-L-S-E.
Yeah. No way.
Yeah. So it used to be
as
called
a professional
DePulse.
Business management software called DePulse.
Yeah. And then a few years ago, they were like, maybe we're driving customers away. So changed the name, kind of rebranded, whatever, which was a wise move. But this is actually part of the reason that once I started playing with ClickUp, which is like very slick, it does all the things that Monday does. And then everything that we've been annoyed about with Monday, it either does better or does, period, because Monday doesn't do that. And then as I was also playing with this stuff, then I was like, and once I learned that also Monday is this 10-year-old piece of software, I was like, they have no excuse. That also means that I can't just assume that they're actually going to make this stuff better, you know, because they haven't. They haven't made that stuff better. It's been a long time. And so we started digging into it, and it's pretty fucking cool. Like, but it's really good.
This is what's hilarious, because of course, you know, on the weekends we actually try to – So the first couple of months of quarantine, we were doing the podcast on Sunday mornings. Mm-hmm. And the end result of that was that because we ended up just, you know, shooting the shit and chatting for like 2 hours, it basically felt like another work day on accident, because we all sort of hang out in the context of work all the time. And so we were like, we need to stop doing this because it's not restful on the weekend. So we switched over to, you know, more or less not seeing each other on the weekends is sort of the method currently. And the funny thing was, on Sunday, I think, is when Adam was like, hey guys, in Discord, I found this ClickUp thing and we should really look into it. And I think Seth's response, internal response, was probably the same as my first internal response, which was like, oh no, another tool. It's like, it's better than Monday. It's like Monday, but better. And I'm like, is this really necessary? Is this going
to
be worth it?
That was my response. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cause we switched to Monday in June. We were using Trello for about a year, I think. And the big problem with Trello is it is one thing.
And it's very good at being that one
thing. It's very good at having cards that move across a Kanban board. Mm-hmm. Like, if that's what you need, and that's the only thing you will ever need, then Trello's your thing,
yeah,
right?
It's got hotkeys all over the place.
But of course, we're running this company where we have to do all kinds of stuff, like keep track of version systems and handle bug reports and assign work in very specific weird ways sometimes, and track features by patch and like all these things that having everything in one giant pile of cards really kind of sucked at. Yep. Right.
Yeah, and we talked a lot about it at the time. So probably if you rewind about 9 months, you'll be able to hear all about it. But the gist was that Trello is really good for task management, but not good for project management. Yes. So that's why
there's no high level tool.
Yeah, there's not high enough level stuff. So we were looking for new higher level tools that were still also weren't like really in the weeds, sort of like these really big, like Jira, these like really big project management things. And so Sam was doing research at the time, settled on Monday after doing all these sort of researching. And it's worked a lot better. It's still basically Trello, but just with more options to make higher level kinds of process management stuff.
Yeah. So we have all kinds of super fun stuff in Monday now, where we have things like when we trigger a build through our deployment pipeline, we have a board in Monday that talks to our we call it the game pipe. It's like our robot that manages builds. And so you can go to our Monday board and we can watch different builds for different games, sort of like flipping states from like building to build succeeded, you know, that kind of thing. So we can very easily, you know, sort of adapt how this system works to suit our needs. The problem is, we gained all that, all these like cool APIs, ways to make custom boards. But what we lost was literally all of the good stuff that Trello had. Right? Like Trello was really good at what it did for task management, and Monday is just not very good at
those things.
Mm-hmm. So we still felt like it was the right move.
Yeah, but and it now, still was the right move, even in retrospect. It was the right move.
Yeah. But now, of course, when we look at ClickUp, it's basically – it does all the things that Monday does.
All of them better.
All of them better than Monday does them. And it also does all the things that Trello does. And so I was pissed off.
And it has better plans. And it has better plans. Yeah.
It's cheaper, et cetera, et cetera. You can use it as an individual even, and it's – free for like with you still get a lot of the features for free and all this stuff. And so I was it's one of those like sort of I don't think there's a word for it in English, but like a good kind of pain, you know, where like Adam comes in on the weekend and he's like, hey guys, you got to check out this ClickUp thing. And I'm immediately enraged because I'm like we switched to Monday in July. It hasn't even been like 6 months, you know, since we did this. Mm-hmm. And we've developed all these tools around it. We've migrated all of our work. It was a huge pain in the butt to learn this new system. And now it feels like we've hit a good stride with Monday. We're like, we're using the tool very well.
Do you want to just throw this all away?
Yeah. And so, you know? So I was like, plus it's the weekend. I'm not looking at this shit. And so I didn't. But then on Monday and Tuesday, I'll take a peek. So I started just like managing a few of my tasks and stuff in ClickUp. And I was like, oh God, God damn it. Like this is clearly so much better than what we were working with that we have to.
It's when you realize that you're being forced into a better future, you know, yeah. You're like, oh. Yeah.
Well, this is the thing with tool adoption, because like, you hear this all the time, like in DevOps, like when you hear people talk about DevOps who do like DevOps consulting and, you know, that sort of thing, what they always say is that the problem isn't the tools, it's always the people, right? So mm-hmm. You can demonstrate, you can show, look how much better this thing is, right? Or in the case of like DevOps, it's often a pipeline, right? And you're trying to convince somebody, hey, we want to construct this thing where there are these 10 pieces of software that all talk to each other, and they talk to each other over a network, and like you're going to pay us to come in here, and it's going to cost like X thousand dollars. We're going to build this thing for you. And when it's done, we get to the other side of it, you got to change all of your habits. But once you do, Once you make this investment,
the future.
Look
so
what
bright.
Your life is going to be, right? You're gonna write your code like usual. And you're gonna hit one button, and boom, everything is deployed. No more conflicts. No more so. You get on the list of all the things that are great, right? And every item you list that's great, everyone's just thinking, but is it that great? You know, because you're only thinking of the context of the cost to getting there. So you see these things with like TypeScript and stuff, right? Where TypeScript is. Once you've used it, once you've like really sat down and truly used it, it is unambiguously, without any uncertainty, 100 times better than plain old JavaScript. It just is. And the only way to argue against that is to come up with a stack of reasons where you're just like, oh, but now I have to have all this extra tooling, right? Now I have to have this like extra – like you start going down the list of like here are all the reasons why switching to this is a bad idea, when really it's actually you don't want to and you're rationalizing –
yeah.
Ways to not have to work, right?
Yeah. Because it's change. As a person, you always demand and hate change, right?
Yeah.
Like change is hard, but also you know that it's important. But I kind of feel like, okay, moving your,
yep,
your apartment, moving your house, whatever. Huge pain in the ass, right? What happens when you move though? You rethink everything. Yep. You take a bunch of stuff and you're like, I don't need all this shit. You donate a bunch of it, or you get rid of it, or whatever. Give it to some friends. Suddenly you're a lot lighter. You have a lot less stuff going on. You come into a new space. You're reevaluating. How do I want to live my life? Where do I want these things to be? How do I want my morning to be? Like you're just like
it's
suddenly
a tabula rasa, you know, it's a blank slate.
You're rethinking everything. And it's like it's a moment to kind of start anew. And this is kind of how I feel whenever we make one of these tool jumps, because what always happens is we just ditch a bunch of garbage.
Yep.
Like when we switched from Trello, I think we ended up just abandoning like 200 carts.
Yeah.
Yeah, at least.
Because we were looking at them all and we're like, we don't need to do all these. We're never going to do all these things.
Plus the entire archive, right? Everything that we'd archived over the past like 2 years or whatever it was also just abandoned.
Yeah. And it's been great, you know? So sometimes you just got to do these things, and it's painful, but it's not, I guess it's not painful. It's just expensive, but you know, you got to spend money to make money, right?
I think everything comes at a cost. It's really that feeling that, especially when you're already operating at a highly efficient level, which we are, right? With using Monday and all of our tools and processes and stuff, there's definitely a feeling of like, isn't this enough? Like, do we need to get more? Like, what? How much is this? How much do you need? How much
better do I have to be?
Yeah, and I think, especially you as a person who has done the work, it's sometimes tempting to be like, you know, look how far I have come. Or in our case, us as a studio have come, you know, from where we were a year ago, we are operating at like a blistering pace all the time. And it's very tempting, yeah, to just say like, you know, using your internal frame of reference to say, we are so much better than we were, why do we have to change more? But the really important thing is that you are not judged on your own internal reference. Mm-hmm. You're judged purely on external reference. So it does not matter how fast you are going compared to how fast you were going. That's what you hold on to when you yourself are doing the changes and working through your stuff. And, you know, especially in creative work, not comparing yourself to others in the moment is required. But the reality is that at some point you have to recognize like either you're not up to speed or you could be going faster and it should be, you know, like an industry standard thing you hop on board with. So,
and even if you don't, because you get into all this kind of trouble if you start comparing yourself to other people and other systems, mm-hmm. because realities are not different for, realities are not the same for any two people. But even if your goal is just to like constantly be improving, it is just so tempting once you feel like you're competent to just like sit in that spot, you know? You can get away with it, right? Because you don't know any better. I think the reason that for me the Mondays, which was like, I didn't have any feeling whatsoever of like, oh no, because there are a few things that because of how I do my own work as a programmer in particular, but because of the other things that I use around that, like GitHub and all this other stuff, right? There are a few things, and there's one really big one, which sounds dumb, but it's just like, which is Markdown. It's Markdown. So Markdown is a way of typing stuff that explains how it's supposed to look without actually having like you don't make a thing bold. You put asterisks around it. It's
essentially cheat sheet HTML.
Yeah, it's like dead simple HTML, right? And the beauty of it is that it's portable. It's like a plain ass, boring ass text file, right? You can take it anywhere. You can convert any format you want. You can do whatever. And so that is how all documentation is written in like open source code. But then also, most like big projects that are, you know, slowly change their habits over time also are doing that now, and so on and so forth. So like, it's the way that you type now, right? If you are
Monday
Monday doesn't support it at all, like not even the tiniest bit. And so every time I'm trying to do anything, I just end up using other tools. I end up using Notion because it has Markdown support. We've started migrating all of our – we migrated to GitHub in part so we could use GitHub issues, right? Because that's a nice system. But part of that was because I was like, oh, good. Thank God. Now I can actually like use a good system to have Markdown and have all these like cool features to document all of my issues and then just like have cards made incidentally, automatically in Monday just sort of like to have it there, right? Because now we can see the work and track the cumulative work in Monday. But the details of it, you know, I'm just like, thank God I can get this in a system that actually like I can that is pleasant to work with, right? And so for me, like I had enough, and then also in the way that I prefer to do things is on a Kanban board style, you know, of workflow, mm-hmm. which in Monday is just a very medium experience. And so that's the only view I ever look at. And like I couldn't do Markdown. It's like I was just like my normal day-to-day experience in Monday was that it was just a worse Trello, right?
Yep.
And it's of course,
like I said, it's better for project management. So if you
want to look at, but on the project level, and we do like our Monday stand or our Monday meetings, and we do our daily standups and like all that kind of stuff, like all of that was much better than before. Yeah. And so I just sort of like, it was like trading one thing for the other, and I was just using external systems to make up for it. So as soon as I saw like I had like this laundry list of things that were pissing me off about Monday, and so I just checked every single one on ClickUp, and I was like, oh yeah, it just fucking does it. And my favorite one, besides just the things that I wanted to do in the first place, is you can flag cards with like reciprocal blocking / waiting on relationships, and then it'll alert you when a card has become unblocked. Such a simple feature. Such a simple thing, but
Yeah, and it's automated. So if you say like this card requires this other thing, like this task requires this other task to be completed, right? Then one will be marked as blocked, and the other will be marked as blocking,
mm-hmm.
right? And if the blocking one, if you check that off, if you set its status to done or whatever, then boom, the blocking status is removed. So now you have a quick instantaneous visual. So you could even, for example, when you're looking at your work,
you can add an automation to that too. So they could be like, when a thing gets unblocked, put it in the inbox, you know, like.
Yeah, flip it back in the inbox. And when you're looking at your work, you could be like, you know, just don't show me stuff that's blocked because like it's blocked. Mm-hmm. So it's also
important to note the context of all this is happening in, which is if you look at our studio's processes and tooling, everything has changed in the last 6 months.
Yeah, that's true.
Since Levelhead came out.
That's because every single thing.
Yeah.
Levelhead came out, so we had time, and we took the time. Mm-hmm. Then we also changed our work practices and started adapting around Monday. And then we just recently migrated from Bitbucket to GitHub.
And we're on GameMaker 2.3 now.
Rebuilt all of our tools. Yeah, like everything has been changing enormously over the past 6 months. So that is true.
You know what? I think as much as 2020 was a real shit piece, you guys, I think we did a pretty good job of using it as a cocoon to metamorphose, mm-hmm. you know? I think we're still in the liquid soup phase of the cocoon, of the metamorphosis. Mm-hmm. You know, we haven't reformed into a solid body yet, but we're working on it.
I think it's probably more metaphorically like a forest fire sort of situation, where we have a seed that's activated by high ignition temperatures
by burning it down, and we've been laying
down just piles of dead leaves, just like years of dead leaves, and then finally.
This year, everything just caught on fire, and we were like, okay, it's okay. You know, this is happening. We'll just wait it out a little bit, and then we'll do our thing. You know, we're going to sprout up.
We'll sprout up into a barren wasteland, you know. Mm-hmm.
Did we include burn it down in our studio principles, or did we remove that? I think it used to be
burn it down is not in there, but it is. It's one of our like a. Every studio or every business has little cultural laws, right? That you can sort of sum up, and burn it down is definitely one of ours, which is at some point you just gotta just torch it all to the ground.
Yeah. Once the can we not gets big enough, then you just burn it down. Mm-hmm. So anyways, click up, check it out. If you're looking at, you know, ways to sort of revamp your workflow and stuff, we're pretty pumped about it. We haven't made the switch yet, but we're gonna probably do it.
Yeah, the main thing is, of course, we got like all these automated things in Monday. So, because if it was just migrating cards across and that's it, it probably would just be like, let's just do it tomorrow. We're done, you know. But
yeah, it's all the tooling.
There's a whole API we got to
shit show. Get on things we got to move over. So.
Yeah. So other news, there's a quick bulletin, which is that we talked about Apple's small business program, which allows you to have a 15% revenue share for Apple instead of 30, which means something like 22% or whatever, more money for yourself, mm-hmm. which is great. But you have to apply to that program. And it does apply
retroactively, correct, for this year?
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure it applies retroactively.
But if it does, that's awesome.
I think it does.
So they're accepting applications through December 18th of this year, which means by the time this episode airs, you'll have like a week and a half. So
get it done.
If you're an iOS developer, you know, do that thing.
Or if you're thinking about doing iOS development next year, do it. Just do it. Just get it
done. Yeah,
just
if you have it. Yeah, sign up for the developer program, pay your $100 to get your certificate. Yeah,
and now you've made $0, so
you've made no money. I don't know. They might have a requirement that you have to have at least like one app.
Yeah,
it's possible. I don't know, maybe. But
if you don't have an app yet, there's no way you can set up an account and get an app through review by the time deadline hits.
That's probably not. Yeah. But definitely get on that. Save yourself some cash. All right, let's get on to some questions. These questions come from our listeners over at podcast.bscotch.net. Highest upvoted question comes from Mopate Flatunk, who says, since no one wears shoes during quarantine, are you going barefoot? Socks? Slippers? Does it depend on the flooring?
I wear socks and shoes. I don't wear shoes because I think if you wear shoes in the house, you're a barbarian. But I do wear slippers because those are just house shoes that never go out. Because the key is they don't go outside, you know? Because otherwise, the whole point of a house is that's inside. You don't bring the outside inside. That's inside. There's
it's like
outside.
A house cat.
Separate things. You know? Yeah, it's like a house cat. Stays inside, doesn't go outside. Because it's the moment you break that rule, now there's shit on your floor. That's just
all hell breaks loose.
Yep. But I do wear slippers because I have very steep wooden stairs, and if I could. So my options are basically either barefoot or have traction that comes from something else. So I can't just wear socks.
And ironically, the thing that you put on your feet to keep from slipping is slippers.
I was just thinking about that. I know. Kind of stickers, right?
Because I think it's slippers because you slip them on. You know,
they don't slip. You slip them on. Yeah,
you slip into them. You're like, oh god, and like you fall into them. Right.
I know this sounds unrelated, but we should talk about positioning as it relates to slippers because damn, that's good. I mean, think about it. So what the point is, like, the benefit of a slipper is two parts, right? One is that when you're inside on a hardwood floor, you're actually not going to slip anymore.
Yeah,
right?
Or if it's winter, you can be warm.
Mm-hmm. The other benefit, though, is that you could just put them on real fast. They're fast shoes, right? Mm-hmm. Now, the issue is when you talk about selling something like a slipper, which do you pick? Which one, right? Do you
pick part?
You pick the fact that it's fast to slip this on your foot or the fact that it stops you from falling downstairs. And apparently, everyone's like, I would rather be able to put my shoes on quickly than have traction. Like, that's what's most important to me. It's interesting position.
Yeah. Problem. Now, I kind of wish I had slippers. I don't have slippers. And I don't know.
Slippers.
And I don't know why I wish I had them, because I've had, you know, plenty of opportunities. Like, every minute of every day, I could just suddenly go buy some slippers.
Sure, you're an adult.
And I just haven't. So I guess I don't wish I had slippers. But you could wish
that your prior self had already solved this problem for you. That's completely fair.
There's a big distinction between wanting to have something and wanting to do the work required to get it.
Yeah.
I want to just have slippers, and I just want them to appear without me having to do anything about it. But that hasn't happened yet. Maybe
for
it
some
will.
Reason. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, Christmas is coming. Maybe
it is.
Maybe Santa's going to bring me some slippers.
The problem, of course, is that now you've got to do research. It's like, okay, well, what company did I go look at slippers for? And then, like, which one of these look fine?
It's just like this click up thing.
Isn't it too hot? Does this have traction? It's just, I finally found a pair a couple of years ago, which I then just like, I just, they're slowly disintegrating because I have to like wash them, you know, every once in a while. And they're not really – I mean, they can be washed. They, you know, they say washable. But, of course, for me, that means throw it in the washing machine and hope it doesn't disintegrate.
Destruct.
Mm-hmm. And so it's like – but they work. It's going to be hard to find another pair. So I'm just like, I'm going to wear these things until they are no more.
That's how I feel about my 2010 Ford Focus.
Yeah, so I have a 2009 Ford Focus that's also just like –
This thing gets me from A to B. It has reasonable gas mileage, and the insurance is super cheap because it's worth nothing.
Yep.
So, gonna ride this thing into the ground.
Yep. Yeah, my son, my wife is very keen on the house slippers concept, and because she's like, my feet are always cold, and yours are always cold too. Because, of course, you know, part of the thing about living with another person, you get in bed, and you got cold feet, you touch another person with your feet. It's just one of the things you got to do, right? And so she's always like, you are.
Well, again, one of the problems completely solved by having individual blankets for each person.
Or individual air conditioning units that plug into your.
Well, on that note, we have one of those just electric blankets that I busted out last week.
Nice,
so now, like an hour before bed, turn that thing on. It's at the foot of the bed. Turn that thing on. I got to tell you, that does make a big difference. Get in there, you're like, I am cozy. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
But so the thing is, my extremities get very cold while I'm working, like all the, for, I don't know why. I don't know if this happens to you guys
too. Yeah.
Yes. Like my hands are always literally just like cold as fuck.
It's because while you're working, your body's like, I got all this blood. It could go anywhere, but like clearly the brain needs it right now. So it's just
right?
Shove it. Every blood. I was going to say
all the blood.
That's wrong. But every blood thingy just inject it right into your brain just as fast as possible. Just like, and it shuts off. It just squeezes all the other vessels in your whole body down to nothing. It's just like
okay, good because this part of my argument was like it's because I'm working so hard.
I mean, I just made all that up, but it's probably true.
That's just science.
It's just science. So my hands and feet go extremely cold, and so she's been trying to get me to wear slippers. I'm wearing them right now because I was very cold this morning. But typically, if I'm indoors, if it's not cold as hell, which of course we're in the winter, so now it is, but if it's not cold as hell, then I'm barefoot because I like to stick to the damn ground, you know? I slipped down the stairs once, almost like ripped my shoulder off, holding onto the railing, and I was, and that's because I was wearing socks. Yeah, and I was like, never again.
You can't wear socks.
It's so dangerous. My God, on a hardwood floor. Carpet's probably better, but you know.
I just like wearing socks on hardwood because like hardwood floors to me just always feel dirty. Just always.
I like wearing nothing on them because then your feet stick to them like a gecko. You know?
Yeah, but you get that too. Once you got slippers with good grip, then you got it too, right? That's the thing. You can either be barefoot or you can have slippers. The sock layer, you can't just have that layer. It's
got
full stack.
I've got a third option. My option is I have a pair of CrossFit shoes, which are only for being used indoors, right? So I only ever used them in the gym when I was going to the remember gyms?
I remember those.
Yeah. Back when those existed, I used to go there, and I'd wear a different pair of shoes to the gym and put these shoes on at the gym. So these shoes only go indoors, and so I just wear those throughout the day.
I got a question.
So you wear shoes. You wear real shoes.
Real shoes in the house. And they're very light and breathable because they're meant for like running and stuff.
That's got to be the trick because otherwise
they're like good ones. Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Don't think too much. Slippers, canvas, slippers are like when you go for like if you go slipper shopping, they're almost all like fucking here's 10 inches deep of fake animal hair. Like it's like I don't want to have a heat stroke. I just want to be able to step on the floor, you know? Okay, but here's a question. So if you're going to the gym, so I get it. Like you're not wearing these. You are not wearing these shoes outside, right? Yeah. You go into a gym. People are wearing the shoes that they're wearing. Some of those people wearing those shoes outside.
People
this
like
is sort
me
of like a. This is sort of like sure. a. Yeah, it's sort of like the whole like having sex thing. It's like if you have sex with somebody, you're having sex with everybody they had sex with, and you know that sort of thing, right?
That's exactly the
weird argument.
Same. So it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how clean you are. You know what matters is how clean everybody else is. So. Well, it's definitely better than just running around outside. Like,
it's a matter of degrees. So I feel like, you know, somebody, all right. So
person A, tolerance level, you know,
person A goes, running outside. I'm running. Boom. I stepped in some shit. Yep. Oh no. I quickly go, I run to the grass. I try to like wipe it off.
Do that curb thing where you like put your foot on the curb and like wiggle around. It off.
So this person goes out.
Break it out of the little crack.
Yeah. So this person's like, oh God. And then like there's poo on the shoe. You can't get away from it. It's there now, right? They go about their day. They wear that shoe to the gym, and they've got some, some debris on there. Okay, they're walking around now. Not all of that poo is going to end up on the gym floor. That's just true. Just some particulate matter, right?
Yep.
And now I go running, and now not all of that particulate matter is going to end up on my shoe. Just a fraction of it. You know,
so you're saying it's diluted enough that you feel comfortable.
Yeah. Now, and I'm not a believer in what's that kind of medicine where when you dilute stuff, it becomes stronger.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm not a homeopath. So in my worldview, when you dilute something, it becomes weaker. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
So there's a certain level of tolerance where if there's like microscopic dried poo molecules somewhere in my vicinity, my tolerance level. Well, I think is
probably
okay
also this is a scenario too when you have like a pet in the house because like the amount of poop that's already in the house is like,
it's in there.
It's already in there.
And like my dog goes outside to do her business and then she comes back in and she's not changing her shoes, you know, when she goes in and out of the house. So like somebody's the outside is coming into my house.
Somebody is pooping on your floor.
In some degree. And you know, but the thing is like I'm wearing shoes. So, like, my feet are safe.
Also, this is a bit of off-topic, but it's a good time for the PSA when the opportunity arises that homeopathy is not real medicine. Just in case, dear listener, you didn't know that because somehow they're fucking allowed to sell it. Somehow that's legal to just sell fake medicine.
Well, this is actually the insidious thing about it is if you go to I don't know if this is true in other countries, but in the U.S., like if you go into Walgreens or, you know, CVS, like go to a pharmacy, there will be homeopathic stuff right next to actual medicine.
Yeah.
And the homeopathic stuff it'll say like, you know, 1000x strength.
It actually looks great. It's marketed very effectively on the label.
And it's also natural and all this great stuff, right?
That little cross sign, right? Where they're like the sort of we didn't do any research asterisk thing. And then it's like doesn't contain any active ingredients. And you're like
And then that's the whole thing.
It's like it works by not working. That's its deal. You know?
Yeah. And then there'll be like a little tiny – it'll just somewhere next to the actual like name of the medicine, it'll be like homeopathic but really, really tiny. Mm-hmm. So like for people who don't know what homeopathy is, it's this idea that water molecules have memory, which is bullshit. And what you do is you take the thing that you want. Like, let's say you wanted to make homeopathic Tylenol. Okay. Mm-hmm. What you do is you take a piece of Tylenol.
You wouldn't, because Tylenol isn't natural enough as a starting point.
Right.
It's just natural. Started from willow bark.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Willow bark. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. While we're on the medicine, you know, train, yeah. Let's just say you did want to make homeopathic Tylenol. Sure. You take a Tylenol pill. Now, normally, as a normal, you know, reasoning person, you'd be like, I have pain. I will take the Tylenol. Right. Yeah. If you believe in homeopathy, what you're going to do is you're going to take that Tylenol. You're going to throw it in like a gallon of water. Really dissolve the shit out of it, right? Shake that up, and then you're like, no, this needs to
There's
be stronger.
There's still too much in here.
Yeah. So then you would take that gallon of water, pour that into a swimming pool, mix that up real good. Then you dunk a glass of water into the swimming pool and drink that and be like, there's no way this Tylenol could get any stronger. Mm-hmm. Because apparently the belief is that the more water you expose to the thing, the stronger it gets.
But only if you – only though, if you percuss the water. As part of
oh, that's true. You got to beat the shit out of
you
it.
Wait, you have to
slap the water. I didn't know this.
It's well, cause the way they do it, because they'll tell you like the number X. That's the full dilution, right? So it's literally inversely proportional to how powerful it could possibly be, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Or I guess how deadly if they start with a poison, but the ideal case is they started with a poison, because that's actually also what often happens. But then they just and so the dilution does make it less deadly, right? But so if you see 30X, which is the standard. I dug into this a long time ago because I was getting so fucking angry about it. I was like, what actually even is this? And the more you learn about what it actually is, the more insane it is that it's just legal, that you can just sell this stuff. But anyway, so the 30X dilution, it's literally the 30X means they take it, they put it in a volume of water, right? And then they take a little bit out of there, put it in that same volume of water over again. They do that 10 times, right? So, and the point that they get to is where for the volume that you would be like dealing with, like if you're taking that medicine, right? That homeopathic bullshit remedy, then they dilute it to the point where there will not be a single molecule left, because the power of fold dilution, where you just take a small volume, move to a big volume, small volume, big volume, so on, is that it exponentially dilutes like very, very rapidly. And so the whole point is to get to the point where they're statistically
just giving you
is
water.
Not going to be a single fucking molecule in there. And they say, because we slapped it while we were doing this, we took
then the water,
put
remembers.
It in there, slapped it to him, and then the water remembers, because like the essence of the thing, you know, got in there.
But all I know did is it. I want a job slapping water. This is a new thing.
I mean,
I didn't know this was an option.
You can get paid really well selling fake medicine. You know,
you have to be okay
with people dying. With
people dying on your watch.
Yeah. So if you can't tell, this is one of my life pet peeves. That this is just a fucking thing. Where
it's like a PhD molecular biologist. This is the appropriate pet peeve to have.
It's just a fit. Like you just get to go kill people. You just get to go say hey. You got these problems. Like, but hey, we labeled it though, and we said not FDA approved. And hey, we said we didn't actually do any research, but we're going to take people who now don't know that those things are important, right? Because the whole reason they label it, ooh, it's a natural remedy and all this shit, right? Is because they're trying to get you to buy that. They're trying to convince you that that's better than real medicine that does something, right? And I think the best like little punchline joke is like what do you call alternative medicine that works?
Medicine.
Call it medicine.
Yeah. There's a reason it's called alternative medicine, because it doesn't work.
Yep.
It's an alternative to medicine, and then you die from it.
Yeah, but this was definitely a sidetrack, so we can get back on.
So I hope that answers the question about what kind of shoes we wear. Next question comes from who honk a zonk donk?
Oh,
which is
Lord.
I honk a zonk donk.
This is good.
I'm here for as prophets of the age, with the year of 20 Blendy drawing to a close and the world having been thoroughly blended into a fine paste, I ask you, do you feel that it would be prudent to declare a 2021 name that only has positive connotations?
Hmm. That's tricky business though, right?
This is a monkey's paw.
You can't be a sage if you narrow down the interpretation of your words. you know.
We're just going to say what the year is going to be. I mean, we don't control what the year is.
And it will be that. You know? Because that's how
we're just
being – that's how using vague language works, you know.
Yeah. We're going to horoscope the shit out of this thing.
Yeah, the trick is that you can't no matter what – it's like this is the genie problem, right? There's no escaping ambiguity in language. Mm-hmm. So you might say like next year is going to be awesome. You know what one of the roots of awesome is? Aw. You know, like all the stuff came from. It's also equally meaning that it's like terrifyingly
just something big, basically. Something big.
You know, the other root is some. So like it's just a little awesome. Possibly like, there could be just a little bit of awe, and that's it throughout the like maybe the whole of 2020 is blissfully boring as fuck.
There was some awe, but not really enough to
not
really,
enough to know, warrant an awesome. You know? But there was some there though.
It wasn't awful, though, which is the opposite of awesome, which is funny.
Yeah, I will say, though. If you have some, it's great. If it's full of it, that's too much. You know,
it's awful. Yeah. It's awful. Yeah. I mean, I will say that, you know, looking back on our plans for 2020, and when we chose the name of 20 Blunty, because we were like, this is the year of mixing it up, you know, doing some new things. Well,
we were not wrong.
You know?
Yeah.
We've all done some new things this year. We've had some new experiences.
Problem is, I think it's a scale problem, right? Because when you make a declaration like that, you're like, yeah, it's 20 blendy. Like, we're going to change it up, switch things around. We're thinking about that on like a, let's switch from Trello to Monday. Sort of a vibe. Not a like, let's have a global pandemic. Let's pay more attention
to DevOps.
Yeah. And like, and let's have a global pandemic, though. Let's quit our workspace that we just got less than a year and a half ago, and then let's work from home permanently.
Let's upgrade to GameMaker 2.3 that behaves completely differently from 2.2.
Let's burn down Beescotch all of our ID. Games.
Let's burn down Beescotch ID.
You know what? Just fucking switch out of Inkscape. Why don't you go work on a completely new tool now? Like
we didn't go all the way to 3D though, which was
talked about it though.
Yeah, we talked about it. We very seriously talked end of last year. We were like, maybe post Levelhead, if our runway is long enough, is what we said. You know, then we'll, because it would require building new tools and so on, right? The amusing thing here is we had to rebuild all of our tools anyway. But we're like, maybe we need to switch to 3D. You know, but I think we all collectively agreed. No, we don't want to. That's too much.
Which I'm very glad we did, frankly.
Oh my god, yes. Yeah.
Well, there's one final thing we want to figure out how to do in 2D, which is multiplayer. Yeah. Once we finally achieve that, then we can start talking about 3D.
Mm-hmm. Then we can start making terrible 3D games. And we start the whole cycle over, right? We just start making terrible jam shitty games in 3D. And then over roughly 7 years, we'll eventually make something good in 3D.
So we'll move on to VR.
Yeah, so Crashlands 2 is then we'll move on to VR. And then at that time there's presumably going to be some sort of like VR plus smell based like experience, and so
that's what I'm waiting for.
Yeah, we're going to lag behind 10 to 20 years on every piece of technology though.
Oh, you know, can you imagine being a smell developer though? Like
no thanks.
Those first few years, like when we first started making games, like all the games we made, they just kind of looked like shit and they played like shit. But like if you're a smell developer, I mean, everything you make at the beginning is just going to smell like shit. And you just got to really like power through, you know, that first couple of years of just making shit smells before you can really make some good stuff.
And if you're a taste developer, that's even worse, because then like you have to like some like thing that's just like on your tongue, just like it's squirting.
Well, that's just a chef, you know.
Liquids.
That's true.
A chef is just a taste developer.
Yeah, but they're doing it with like things that already exist, you know. But if you're trying to create a device where it's like it's going to squirt chemicals on your tongue and be like, ooh, like suddenly you taste the sea breeze, you know, and it like suddenly like injects some salt and some like algae or some shit into like a thing and powders it and squirts it onto your tongue, you know, like I don't know.
I mean, taste is mostly smell though, right? So like if you're a smell developer, you're already almost there. Maybe you got to start with smell and then, you know, you work your way into taste from there.
Yeah.
We'll figure it out when the time comes. That's a few years off. All right. Next question comes from. Oh yeah. Do we want to declare a 2021 name with positive connotations, or do we want to just say?
Let's see. We could do some guessing.
I think positivity has like the angle is fine. It's just ideal if we can also interpret it negatively. If it turns out we need to.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
It's like 2021. Be positive, but it turns out we all test positive for COVID, and now. Look, that's again not what we meant.
But hey, like, we'll find some silver linings, you know? I don't know what they would be for that particular scenario, but, you know, but there's like, always something.
2021, silver linings. Turns out we've all been silver poisoned somehow. Yeah. Some kind of lining in our jackets.
Now our skin is blue, which is pretty fucking rad.
That's pretty dope.
Pretty rad. We have a hard time functioning and thinking as people, but our skin is blue now. So we've got sort of a Smurf thing going on. All right. Next question comes from Quantum Anomaly, who says, with as many tools as you have, do you have your own internal documentation for each of them? Is it vague, full of technical jargon, or do you add humor or your own Easter eggs for each other to find? What's the document library of a smaller studio even like? This is a tough one.
Yeah. So we use Notion to keep track of basically to do most of our internal documentation, as well as then the Markdown stuff that I mentioned on.
Yeah. So a lot of our documents, so documentation for developing of our code just lives alongside the code and typically in a markdown file or in comments in the code or whatever. Mm-hmm. But everything else is in Notion
or Google Docs. How you actually like run the business stuff is all in Notion. And I think the important thing about documentation is that it's only worthwhile if it's going to be a thing that you don't touch enough to have it always be kind of fresh in mind. If it's complicated enough that you want to make sure when you revisit it, even with a short break, that you get it correct, or if you're sharing it with literally anyone else, those are the three circumstances. I think it's easy to, when you learn about documentation, is like spend a bunch of time, if you're a solo dev, doing a bunch of documentation about stuff that you don't need to document. But you want to pick those things in particular that like are going to, they'll probably fuck you up, basically, if you come back and do it wrong. So in my case, on the art side, if I come up with a way to, for example, we talked about like using Clip Studio Paint as this animation tool, blah, blah, blah. There's enough parts to all this stuff now that it's actually really helpful for me because I bounce around. Sometimes we work on my character art for like 3 weeks at a stretch doing animations and stuff and then switch over, do environment stuff for 3 or 4 weeks. And in that time, because of how complicated some of the systems are that we're working in, it's very easy for me to like come back and just be kind of confused. So usually what I'll do is before I switch over into a new thing, I'll go back and sort of pretty quickly, like within, you know, half an hour or so, just kind of document how I did what I did with some screenshots and stuff like that, and then leave that for my future self to pick up. But I don't put like Easter eggs.
One thing we're doing soon is, you know, we're going on our winter break, which every year we take a week and a half around Christmas, New Year's time, take a break. But that's the perfect time to lose track of all the shit you were doing and then come back and have a terrible January. So you know, one of the things to do before a break like that is to, instead of working right up to the last minute on producing stuff, take that whole last day, you know, and just be like, just
document
wrap up
where you were.
Yeah. Wrap up loose ends and then document where you were and exactly what you need to do to pick up where you left off.
Well, that's the key to documentation, right? Is the question is always, what is this for? Because it's the same logic with comments and code. Like for coding best practices, you always hear your code should be self-documenting, right? Which means that somebody can read the code that is written and be like, oh, I know what this does, right? Because if you rely on a secondary, now you have a dry violation. If you have a secondary thing like a comment that explains what the code is doing, then you could edit one or both of those without the other one being edited. Or sorry, one or the other of those without editing the other one in turn. And now all of a sudden these two things are not actually
during conflict.
Yeah. During conflict, right? And documentation of any sort works the same way. So there's always a risk and a cost to building long-term documentation, which is one, it's costly to do. And two, if you don't have systems to guarantee that it stays up to date, then at some point having that documentation could be just as dangerous as not having it, because you'll assume that it's true, you'll go to use it, and it's so wrong that either you have a mistake or you just spend time having to like now fix it and track down everything all over again, and then you might as well not have had it.
Yeah.
So for any piece of documentation, the question is, who is this for, and when am I going to need it? And when I do need it, what am I going to need to be able to do? And your goal should always be, where possible, to couple your documentation to the thing you're documenting in some way, so that changing one changes the other. And this is outside of the code context. This is often very hard to do. But even if you think of things like templates are a good example of things that are sort of, it's basically infrastructure as documentation, right? So, because you can do this with an art thing, you can do this with all kinds of stuff. Like if you have a template, that thing explains how it works. And if that's the template you use to generate stuff, then, and you update the template over time, then every time you generate something based off of that template, it's up to date. It's like, I do this with TypeScript projects, right? Because details don't matter, but when you're setting up a TypeScript project, there's just a whole bunch of shit you have to do to get it to work properly. Mm-hmm. And so instead of, I found myself over time, every time I needed to start a new one, being like, oh God, what do I need? I have to like go copy paste a bunch of things over, you know? And so finally, too long, frankly, I was like, I just need a fucking template. I just need a template project for this, right? So made a template. I keep that up to date. Every time I go back to use it, I update it first, right? Mm-hmm. I keep its documentation up to date when I update it. And then I use that as the base for any new project. So the idea of documentation, because people think of documentation as like, there's a thing written down in a document that like is in a library of documents that I know exactly where to look and I can go find that thing. But the reality is way more complicated and nuanced. Because also, how do you know the documentation is there? You know?
Yep. How do you know where to find it?
How do you know where to find it?
And also sometimes documentation is incomplete enough that people view it as unreliable and they just don't use it.
And then it decays even further.
Yeah. Or the worst is if you go look at documentation, which immediately starts with the phrase, the way that this thing works is very intuitive and simple. And then, you know what? It isn't. Nope. Because it's code.
I will say one of the processes that we implemented to, because part of our, like we had been generating all this documentation, and part of the question was like, okay, so beyond just the generation of the documentation, which is good sometimes in its own way, right? Because it forces you to have a deeper understanding of what you're working on. How do we guarantee that we'll have some touch with some of these previous documents that have been made? And so we actually have a project proposal and a postmortem phase for every single project that goes to the studio. So for example, like switching all the games over to GameMaker 2.3.
Yeah, and it's automated as part of the workflow on Monday. So it's like when we have a project and we flip its state from waiting to proposal, then that causes a proposal card to be created that links to the document, that links to the template, and you know all of that mm-hmm. stuff.
And so the proposal then has questions about like, has anything like this been done before, and have you read the documentation that exists in Notion for it? Because part of the idea there is that when you have frequent retouching of existing documentation, that's where you're able to people keep it up to date in that context, right? Because you'll never win that war of trying to have documentation that's completely up to date, unless the documentation is the object that you are making, which is not mm-hmm. possible in a lot of contexts.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'd say too, one final note is ever since reading the book Clean Code, I've come to despise the practice of using comments to explain what code is doing, because mm-hmm. there's a number of times where I need to go look up physics formulas to be like, oh yeah, what does it take to like calculate, you know, when something is going to come to a stop based on its like speed and deceleration or whatever, right? Because of course, you know, games are very physics-y. They do a lot of the same kinds of things that you have in the real world. And anytime I look up a physics function or physics formula, I immediately get pissed off mm-hmm. because it uses
the random variable names.
It uses the notation of math where they go – first they kick it off and they go, let A be the velocity with which you are starting. Let B be this other thing.
Yeah,
and let
C be gravity. Why not just fucking call it starting velocity?
Yeah. Just call it that. Use a variable name. Why are we doing this weird like
letters? Especially – yeah, it makes me even more angry doing math stuff too because learning math at the beginning, I just assumed it's like, oh, for some fucking reason, we just decided that they can only have one letter. Like that's what a variable is, right? But then as time goes on, you discover, actually, no, sometimes they can have more than one letter, right? Which then now all of a sudden you're like, well, if they can have more than one, why not just use a fucking word? But then also sometimes two letters next to each other means you're multiplying them together, right? And so now you can't even tell
Did we do this? Well, and then they'll be like, let A be the starting velocity and let A prime be the finishing velocity. So now you'll see an A, but then you're like, mm-hmm. wait a minute. And then you got to take a second look and look for a little one notch, you know?
Yeah. This is one of the things we're always talking about, how there's so much of stuff that people think is like hard and so on, right? Like math and computer science and all this. It's just because people are doing these stupid, shitty ways of teaching it. Because it doesn't have to be this way. It doesn't have to be the case that we use like X equals Y and that's a line, right? Like it doesn't have to be like that. We could actually, and we don't have to use foo and bar in programming, which is one of my biggest pet peeves. The reason that people do that is because they say, we don't want, this specifically doesn't mean anything. right? Because they're like, it could mean anything. Just like plug in whatever you want to those two things. And that's the beauty of math, right? Like you construct a formula and then like no matter what you plug in there, it's true, right? Which is pretty cool. But when you're trying to put it together, there's no reason why you have to have it be generic when you're talking about a specific problem. When you're asking questions like when you're doing a math problem in high school, it's like, you know, like doing algebra, it's like if you have this many apples and that many apples and this person's eating this many apples at this rate and whatever, right? Like, and then you're trying to make a formula like, okay, well, X is apples and Y is time. Is
this translation constant.
Yeah, just fucking call them apples and time, you know? Like, why do we have to do it this way?
And then when you draw your graph, put apples on one axis, put time on the other.
Why are we playing this game?
It's anyway. This is a weird pet peeve to have, but man, it pisses me off.
No, it's not though. It isn't though, because so many people have their entire lives thought that they sucked at math, that they sucked at programming, they sucked at all this stuff, right? And it's because we just have such fucking stupid teaching conventions for these things that are like that were invented by some dudes like 200 years ago or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Right? And they invented that shit. And these are people that are basically doing like, they're inventing ideas, right? And so they're doing like all this very general stuff. And like, and so like all that notation that we use for calculus was invented, you know, literally 200 or 300 years ago, whenever it was that like, you know, Leibniz and whatever the fuck were doing this stuff, right? They were the ones who decided like, oh, I'm going to use prime to mean like a derivative. And like, they were the ones doing this stuff. And because they did it that way, that's just how we do it. Nobody ever sat back and was like, what if we made this more intuitive, right? Because like, that person was really smart. He was talking to really smart people. He was trying to solve these really interesting problems. He was doing this like very generic way because like he was trying to illustrate an idea. And for some fucking reason, the way of doing it at the time was to also make yourself seem smart by making stuff unnecessarily convoluted, which is like, we always do this.
I think it's actually just it's actually just a shorthand problem. Because like think about who's teaching. Because like you as a teacher
write with your hands. Yeah, and with a chalkboard,
Or write with a quill. Literally, calculus was made when writing with a quill was a thing, right?
Yeah. Well, so it is like, true, because if you're deriving long formulas, you're like doing pages and pages of like moving symbols around, right?
Yeah, so
the longer those symbols are, the
oh my God.
That's true.
That'd be
insane,
you know? So you need a shorthand. You do need a shorthand. Yeah. But the idea that you should start
you
teaching
don't need it when you're learning
with a shorthand. Yeah, you're not deriving a fancy ass cat. You're like learning algebra. Sit down, you know.
Yeah, but also like when you're deriving a formula or when you're trying to prove something, I get it. Sure, use all the shorthand you need. When you have the final thing, when you have the end function, which where you say like, here's the tiny function that you would use to calculate like how far something would fly if you shot it out of a cannon. You know, it's got like six things in it. Use words. It's okay now. You've done all the work. Yeah. You figured it out. Put some words in there.
Put the words
How
back
about
in.
That? Yeah.
Which is also a good tip. Anytime you're trying to like look up a math thing or solve your own math thing or whatever, just do it like a modern, not computer scientist, a modern programmer would do, which is like use variable names that you can read as a person and know what they mean. Because if you don't, what you always have to do, and this is why it's so stupid, is you have to, when you see the letter X or the letter V, you have to be like, oh yeah, that maps onto velocity, right? If you do that stuff enough, if you spend your whole life like writing physics equations, then like maybe just like now you've just mapped V directly to the concept of velocity instead of through the word velocity, right? But in all other scenarios, if you're adding a mapping layer in between the concept and the thing that represents it, then all you're doing is adding mental overhead for no fucking reason.
I think this is probably actually, you know, a lot of people, like you said, Adam, they believe that they're bad at math. But the fact is that like math is not conceptually
it's not any different than it's just another like, thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And what's hard about math genuinely is learning how to read it. Right.
Like, well, it's a collection of rules, right?
Just a bunch of rules. Yeah.
It's one of the things I learned like way later than I wish I had, which, and I didn't even learn it in college. I learned it by picking up just this random ass book that looked fun. That was like 30 years old out of a half price books, you know, that was like, it was called something like On Math or something like that. Right. And it was the first thing I picked up, and it was still like very generic and like very symbol heavy, but the guy explained, he's like, hey, look, math is fucking made up. We just made this up, right? So keep that in mind as we're going through this. Like rules like you know, like the exponent rules, like why is you know like when you use I was going to call it a bang, but an exclamation mark, right? So
factorial,
right? It's like why is zero factorial one? It's pretty fucking weird, right? And like, well, it was really convenient if it was, is why, right? You know, it's like
it worked out pretty good that way.
Yeah, it's like why is like x, because like x squared, I get that, that's x times itself. X to the minus one, we just call what that one, right? Anything to the minus one, we just call one. Why? Because it's convenient, right? It makes things work really well if we just decide that that's true. So that's kind of what most of math is. It's like it's either there's like all these rules you memorize, and then the cool thing about it is like it's just moving. It's like literally it's moving symbols, right? This is why. And they don't teach you this, unfortunately, right? But like the whole reason you're doing this whole like A plus X, whatever, is because the beauty of it is you just have these rules, right? And then if you put symbols in with those rules and then you just move them around, you just literally, it's like math is moving symbols around. That's it. Like right? You move it to that side. You just like switch this to that. Like, but it's following a set of allowed rules. It's,
the rules are very explicit.
Yeah. And if you use the rules and only the rules, then you can take any collection of things and convert them into some other collection of things, right? Yeah,
which means you can do creative problem solving.
Which means you can do creative problem solving. Yep. It's a tool for doing creative problem solving based on these rules that turn out to be convenient, right? That's like the whole thing.
Cool.
That's math. It's amazing.
I feel like questions seem to really get us riled up. Man,
these guys, although the shoes one took a turn to get us there, but even still, they hit it.
Well, that's
because the last question wasn't about math, was it?
Oh, no, it was about documentation. That's true.
It was about documentation, but
this is our airing of grievances, I guess, is what this – oh, yeah, actually, there was a part of that question we didn't answer, which was about it being serious or, like, funny or full of Easter eggs or whatever. So I will say at the very beginning, very funny documentation. Today, very serious documentation, which is mostly because, like, we're trying to get that part done, you know? And I think there was a period in time where, like, it was actually – easy for me to write in a very casual way where I just like could try to be fun with my writing, you know? But over time, it's like just doing more and more programming where I'm just like, it's a lot of structural thinking and then writing articles for other institutions and like trying to be more of a, like a professional business, like all this stuff has collectively made it so that now I actually have to expend more effort to try to make a thing entertaining than to explain, especially, but I think also when you're trying to explain complicated concepts, like, it becomes, because now you're looking for metaphors and like you might find a funny one, you know, but like it just all starts to become.
Yeah. I either use funny metaphors or funny stories. Good examples. When we were working on the spine stuff for the character in Crashlands 2, the prototype Seth and I had made, we tested one of our guesses about Game Maker's ability to handle additional slots, things you can attach pictures to in spine by me just adding 500 pelvises to the character.
Yep.
So that's one of the examples of Dr.
And you made it so that one of its poses was just flipping off. It's like when its head would come up, it would just flip off the camera, you know? Yep.
It's just a hideous pink, fleshy, gross hand. Man. Yeah. Uh-huh. And he would flip you off and then like sling a tomahawk around.
Yeah. So there is some stuff like that we do.
But that's not documentation. That's just basically us saying we are definitely throwing this away.
Yeah,
and nobody else needs to see this. So we'll just
have to be careful though with this. So this is one of those rules. Like there's a podcast syntax.fm that I listen to that's about web dev. And every Halloween they do spooky dev stories, right? Where people write in and they just like write. They tell some story about something horrible that happened, right? Which is usually they fucked up in some way. And a surprising fraction of those are people who made a template, you know, like they had some like starter thing and they just kind of like forgot or, you know, something happened so that it didn't get updated where then like a customer saw like this temporary text that somebody put in or like a console log in the, or something, like something they just kind of tucked away and forgot about where there was like, they just like something profane, something
that you're always really swearing. That's the thing. Like programmers are always swearing. So like if I had to guess, if you have a temporary variable name, temporary comment, temporary, like an echo where you'd be like, check this, you dumbass or something like that would be like the echo that comes out. Yeah. And then that shows up on your client's website and you're like,
yeah,
well actually my comments. So this was like when I was first, you know, doing game programming, my comments were always profane. Mm-hmm. And always kind of jokey.
And your Git logs.
And my Git logs, right?
Which are baked into the history of the project permanently, right? It's
And then one day, Yo-Yo Games was like, hey, we're putting together this thing. Would you be willing to add the source code of Flop Rocket to this Humble Bundle. Oh, yeah. And I was like, sure. So I had to spend had to spend a whole day scrubbing through the code looking for swear words and scrubbing mm-hmm. them from the project. And I missed several. And then I sold it. So and yeah,
and you can get away with some stuff and some context, you know, like if but yeah, I think that it's just one of those things that like you got to be a little more careful than you think once you're moving into a professional space it's that whole like we talked about in the past, like it's like being ready, right? Being ready to pounce on an opportunity and things that are fun but in a way that isn't, because you can be fun in a way that still is like professional enough, right? You don't have to be just like a fucking stick, just being mm-hmm. boring and uninteresting, right? You can still do things that are fun. You can still like tell jokes. You can like the way that I like to do things when I'm explaining to the rest of the team how like some server thing works is I'll just like pretend the server is a person and the client is a person, have them talk to each other, right? Mm-hmm. And in that context, like there might be some like profanity here and there or whatever, but like in that context, it's fine. It works, right? It's like if somebody else saw that, I wouldn't be embarrassed in the slightest. If I had the opportunity to then like put that on a professional like gamesindustry.biz or something, like I wrote up an article and wanted to include that snippet, sure shit, I would edit that, right? Not it's a question of like what does professionalism mean? And you just have to be really careful baking things into stuff you don't check frequently or stuff that is permanent about the level of professionalism involved there.
Yep. So hope that answers your questions on documentation. And thanks, everybody, for asking questions. I think we're going to try to do a little better job in the future of getting a few more questions answered.
Let's see how many more pet peeves we can uncover. So,
So as always, you can always ask more questions at podcast.bscotch.net. All right, that's all the time we have for this week. We'd like to thank our producers, Fat Bard and Jen Koster, for putting the podcast together. Thanks to our community moderators who keep our Discord running. To get more involved in the Butterscotch community, go to podcast.bscotch.net. We have links to everything, a way for you to donate. You can ask questions for the podcast. And we also have links to the podcast archives. Thank you all for listening. See you next week.
Bye.
Bye.